And I am a bit of an idealist when it comes to books.
From the COIN Podcast Network studios in Portland, Oregon, this is Six Questions with Emily Burris and Ian Costello.
We're back on the pod waves after a brief hiatus.
Your voice has been missing from the network for the last month or so.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that my voice is just still missing. I'm like,
I've gotten it
back for the most part. We've had some rainy days that have certainly helped. I think the rasp might just permanently be here now because I no longer sleep.
Have you taken up cigarettes?
No, just additional coffee to get me through the mornings. Yes.
You read any good books lately?
Oh, man. I've been working my way through some woo-woo books lately that I'm enjoying in the astrology realm. So that's become a little pandemic hobby of mine. I feel like I'm overdue for a good fiction novel. I've had Wildwood sitting on my coffee table for a year, and I really need to read it.
I go back and forth between the fiction and nonfiction. I kind of got to bounce.
Mm-hmm.
I'll read like two or three nonfiction books in a row, and then I need just something absolutely brainless to take mm-hmm. my mind off of other things.
Oh, totally.
Without making me think very hard.
Right. No, it's become very helpful for me, especially moving to an even earlier schedule now. It has been, like, honestly, one of the only ways that I can wind down and go to bed is to read for 15 minutes at night.
It's the first book you remember reading as a kid.
Oh, man. I read The Hobbit with my parents. So, you know, once I had gotten out of the children's books that were read to me,
mm-hmm.
that was the first one that I really tackled with my mom and dad. That was my first big chapter book, was
that
The Hobbit.
That is a big chapter book.
Yeah, we worked on it for a couple months. But that started my love affair with Tolkien and on all those books. How about you?
I was probably 3 or 4 when my mom started reading Count of Monte Cristo to me.
Nice.
We tackled it again later when I could handle it a little bit more.
And I was going to say, that's also a very big book for a child.
I think she wanted to read it.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll just read to you. It doesn't really matter what I'm reading. It remains one of my favorite all-time books. Just the revenge part of Count of Monte Cristo is something I love.
It's funny how those childhood books really kind of take root and stick with you.
So the reason we're talking about books is I had a chance to talk to, I don't necessarily know if she would be the queen of books in Portland, but I had a chance to talk to Emily Powell last week for the return of Six Questions here, and it was a fascinating conversation just to hear not only the story behind Powell's, the story of Powell's relationship with Portland, the story of Emily's relationship with books. It was a very fun interview, and it's a great return to these podcasts.
You know, she's become such a well-known person here in Portland, obviously, because Powell's is such a Portland institution. I mean, you could argue that that's probably one of the things that most people who've never visited Portland, if you ask them something they know about the city, they'll tell you, oh yeah, there's that bookstore Powell's. It's an entire city block.
And we get into that in the discussion about how it maintains this kind of iconic status, not just locally, but around the country and around the world. Book lovers know Powell's,
mm-hmm.
but people who want to visit Portland find out very quickly about Powell's too. It was when I was traveling here in college and I said, I'm going to Portland, two people immediately got to go to Powell's,
mm-hmm.
have to go to Powell's,
mm-hmm.
make it your first stop, your second stop, your eighth stop. Just make sure you get to Powell's.
Mm-hmm.
So went to Powell's, went to Voodoo.
There you go.
Left town.
Check, check.
I was out. One thing to note about the conversation is that she joined us from her home in Central Oregon because her 6-year-old is at a school that was doing some distance learning at the time we talked. So you will hear him a couple times during the conversation. She'll make reference to it, but there is a little bit of background noise from him doing some at-home learning.
Mm-hmm.
But in the era we're in right now, that's just kind of the way it is. So
part of pandemic life.
It was an absolute pleasure to talk to her, and I'm looking forward to sharing it. might be a bit of a strange question to start with here, considering what it is you do and why we are chatting today, but do you like books?
Oh my God. My computer is literally sitting on a stack of books at the moment because I can't go anywhere. I asked my son to try to pick the duffel bag up that we're out in Central Oregon since we're online for school for a few days. And I don't think anyone could lift the bag I brought of books with me. So yeah, I like books. But luckily that comes genetically, I think.
I want to get into some of that genetics here in a minute, but yeah. I wonder if you can think back and tell me, what's the first book you remember reading? And did that immediately launch your lifelong love of books, or did that come later?
That's a really good question. I have no idea. I really don't. I just, you know, just off the cuff, I'm being honest, I really don't. What I remember is always having books with me. I mean, that's my first memory of books, is just that they were always, of course, around the house, but that I personally always had, you know, a stack, ones I could read, that came with me anywhere. If we would travel as a family, I'd be reading under the table in the restaurant. It was just somehow with me from the beginning. And of course, I did grow up in a reading family. I'm sure you won't be shocked to hear that. So it's just always been part of my daily bread and butter.
When you were carrying around those books, was that your encouraged activity or something you always wanted to do? You wanted to be reading as opposed to playing other games. I don't know, want to say playing outside, but reading as opposed to watching TV, reading as opposed to doing a lot of other things?
Well, certainly I always did other things as well, but it's a little bit hard to separate in the sense that when you grow up in a reading family, it's not like we were also playing baseball, you know, in the backyard. Mostly, you know, we were doing a lot of reading. My parents, I'm an only child, you know, they read a lot, I read a lot, and we traveled, but otherwise there was reading. So mostly it was just what we did and what I did as a result.
Your family's come up quite a bit already in this. You said you're an only child.
Yeah.
For those who may not know, how did your family get into the bookstore business? In addition to that, or next question, how did the Powell's flagship store end up at the corner of Burnside and 10th in Portland?
Well, I should clarify, my mom's actually not in the business. It's always been my father. It was my father and then my grandfather and then my father again, and then me. My mom is a therapist. And we always joke that any good family business should have a therapist in the family. So in that regard, she is in the business, but she's always had her own career. My father started the book business in Chicago, actually. He was a graduate student at the University of Chicago. It's where he met my mom. And he, to make ends meet getting by as a graduate student, would go around to book sales. There were often, you know, auctions or libraries selling inventory. He would go around and buy books, and he would keep an inventory, you know, on a piece of paper and his notebook. And then he would sell those books to universities or booksellers, bookstores, other collectors. And that's how he made a living to supplement, you know, while he was going to school. And it, you know, gradually did better and better. And he was eventually offered the opportunity to take over a storefront in Chicago. And the first store was born there. And while he and my mom went on vacation one year, my grandfather, who was retired in Portland, came out to watch the store for them. And he liked it, enjoyed, and always wanted to have a store of his own doing something of this sort. And so he came back to Portland and gradually sort of got ready to open his own bookstore. You know, he was already retired at that point. He didn't need or want necessarily to be fully employed at that point in his life. So he called my dad and said, I need some help. So my dad and my mom and me, I was about 6 months old at the time, moved back to Portland. It's where my dad had grown up. And my grandfather called, I want to say the night before they were getting on the plane, but it was probably less dramatic than that, and said, we've lost our lease for our storefront. So, you know, when you get here, you need to find us a new location. They were at the time around 12th and Burnside in what is now Spartacus. And so we sort of joke about the progress of Western civilization from bookstore to Spartacus. No offense to Spartacus at all. So he spent a year, you know, trying to find a location and ended up purchasing the block that we occupy, which to me is sort of mind-blowingly audacious. They had no money. The owners were originally the parents of the McMenamin family, you know, who later went on to become quite famous. Mr. McMenamin was an attorney and he drew up the sale contract and, you know, they had to figure out what to do from there. My dad likes to joke, it took him longer to buy his first television than it did to buy that piece of property. But that's how it was done then, you know. So the bookstore moved downhill, luckily, from 12th and Burnside, and they just occupied the first quadrant of the store, the current location at first, and they had other tenants for the rest of the building, but gradually expanded, and the rest is history, as they say.
How about your personal journey? You said you got here at about 6 months. What was it like for you growing up in Portland?
Oh, it was fantastic. I mean, I don't I think of myself as a lifelong Portlander. I hope people won't hold that 6 months against me. I've always been a huge booster on this place. I think it's an incredible city. For me, it was about growing up in the store, certainly, you know, helping my dad in the shelves from an early age, helping run a cash register with him at the holiday season. You know, he would scoop me around the store on our book carts. It was a heavenly place to grow up in that regard. You know, just being a kid who loves books, how could you complain? And Portland, I think Portland and Powell's grew each other. You know, I don't think Powell's necessarily could exist anywhere else, but I also think Powell's helped grow the literary community in Portland. The literary community in Portland helped grow Powell's. And so to experience that as a child and watch it happening was pretty magical.
Your lifelong love affair with books, and you talk about carrying a bag with books everywhere you went around Portland. Where were you going? Where did you go to school? Where did you go to high school? And did you ever leave town for a while to go to college?
Well, my parents always liked to travel. And, you know, the birth story of the company is about my parents going on a trip. I believe it was, I might get the stories wrong, but it was, they took a freighter to Yugoslavia, I believe, on that trip. You know, so I grew up traveling a fair amount. And that's mostly when I think of the books coming with me, that's mostly what I picture, a suitcase of books and a suitcase of clothes. And off we went. But around Portland, you know, it's just was, a book was always in my hand. If we were going out to dinner, I would need a book because, you know, your parents get boring at a certain point. So then I could read my book, that sort of thing. I went to school. I grew up in Mount Tabor. My parents have lived there my whole life. They're in the same house. So I went to all of our neighborhood schools until high school when I switched to Catlin. Longtime Portlanders will remember Measure 5. And there was a lot of fear about what that would do to our public high schools at the time. So I went to Catlin. I had an absolutely phenomenal education there. Blew college out of the water. And then I went to school in Philadelphia for college, came back to Portland and worked for a year at the company before we were sort of intercepted by Oregon State University and their Austin Family Business Program. And they said, hold on, you're doing this all wrong. You know, the next generation shouldn't be working for the company. She should go have a boss she's not related to. She should go kind of have to see how the world works and earn her own credentials. And so I moved to San Francisco to be with a boyfriend at the time who lived down there, as you know, people do. And I lived in San Francisco and worked in a variety of jobs for a few years before I came back to Portland in 2004. And I've been here ever since, other than flying back and forth to the Bay Area and New York to get graduate degrees in business from Columbia University and Berkeley. I've been around, but mostly I've been in Portland.
Can you go a little bit into this? I don't know if I want to call it a relationship. What happened with this program at Oregon State, and they encouraged you to not be part of the business?
That's right. That's right. Oregon State has this entity, or they're affiliated with the Austin Family Business Program. They're really a remarkable program. Something like 90, I'll get the numbers wrong, but 90 plus percentage of businesses really around the world, but I believe in the United States, are family business. If you define it by that someone related, you know, to the owner or the operator of the business also works in the company. And they're pretty well studied. And the reality is that something like 30% make it from the first generation to the second, and same from the second to the third. So there are reasons that family businesses, you know, people believe are good for our communities and our economy. So the Austin Family Business Program is tasked with educating and supporting folks in the endeavor of continuing family business. So they knew about us, you know, we're written about from time to time in the press, and they reached out and said, we'd like to offer our services. They have funding to do that, to be sort of consultants for businesses. And we said, sure, that sounds great. And we met with them and they shared, you know, here are some of the obvious pitfalls. And one of the big ones is, yeah, if you want your next generation to ultimately be able to succeed in carrying the business forward, they need to not work in the business their whole life. They need to go have other jobs. They need to have other experiences. They need to see how other companies operate. You become too myopic otherwise. And I think, you know, they've seen a lot of businesses fail for having successor generations. You could come up with a lot of negative adjectives, but, you know, sheltered, not experienced. They say you kind of have to go earn your way first. And then you get a job at the company when you're ready, when the company is ready for you. And that's what I did. I had an entry-level job in 2004 in our marketing department. At the time, we decided my dad shouldn't have to go to work every day for the rest of his life. And so we sort of worked backwards from the year he turned 70 and said, well, here's what a plan might look like. And so in 2004, I had an entry-level job in our marketing department. And then every year, a team would meet. I joke I had more bosses anyone. So if I didn't get fired, it must say something, but you know, they would all meet and they would say, you know, is she clocking in on time? Is she doing her job? Is she nice to her coworkers? You know, does she deserve the next round? So it was different in that I was moved all the time, but the idea was for me to learn the company. So each year I would have more or less a different job as long as I sort of qualified until eventually my dad retired in 2010. And that was all with the guidance and stewardship of the Austin Family Business Program.
Did it hurt to be told you needed to go away for a while?
No, not at all. I mean, first of all, I'm really close with my parents. You know, we've always had a well-functioning family. So we bring that to the table, which helps a lot. So, you know, I knew it wasn't personal. It was, this is, you know, how do we do this? How do we do this really successfully? And, you know, when you're at the time I'm 21 or 22 and I'm going, okay, now what? You know, I'm here. I know a fair amount about this business, but we had a CEO at the time. We had a COO. We have my dad. There's not a lot of room. You know, it wasn't like we needed someone else to contribute at that level. And so it actually made a lot of intuitive sense. So it was the right move. And we all agreed.
After that, can you take me through how you eventually wound up sitting in the chair you're sitting in now, or standing in the office you're standing in now, as the president and owner of Powell's?
Yeah. So, you know, we sort of, again, had these different jobs. I was in the marketing department and I had a variety of jobs within that realm. I actually somewhat forget all of the different positions I've had. I worked in almost every department in the company. I ran our used books. We didn't have anyone who was in charge of used books for the entire company. It was just location by location. So I did that work for a while. I ran our internet business. And then eventually, again, we got to my dad's 70th birthday and his retirement, and I was CEO. We had a CEO at the time, and she became our COO. You know, I quickly realized this feels a little backwards. She has so much more experience than I do, even though I've been around since birth. This is really her game. And so we sort of swapped. I said, you ought to have a chance to do this job yourself, and I'd like the opportunity to continue to learn from you. So I stepped back in that capacity. She retired a couple of years ago, and I took over and have been in the CEO position until last summer, when there's this little pandemic that arrives at our doorstep. The company has been successful, but very challenged for a very long time. And what I realized was I needed help. There are a lot of things I think I'm good at and that I bring to the company in a unique way, but I'm quick to be the first person to say I'm not the right person for every job all the time. And I had been in contact with this gentleman, Patrick Bassett, for over 2 years, talking to him about the possibility of him coming to work with us. So the timing worked out, because I think we would have been way more underwater without his help if he hadn't been able to join us and kind of lend his shoulder to the effort. He and I work closely together. I'm the owner of the business. I'm the president. I like to think at the end of the day, so much of what I do is about thinking about 50 years down the road, and his job is the next 5 years. So I'm always trying to make these much more subtle sort of adjustments, because if you don't, you know, you can end up dramatically off course in 50 years, even though it might feel like a very tiny nudge, you know, when it comes to what we do today or tomorrow. But that's how I think about my work and his at the moment.
When we come back, we'll take a further look at Powell's relationship with the city of Portland and explain what happened when they found a man asleep in the bookstore.
Hi, this is Jeff Giannola from Coin6 News, and I'd like to invite you to watch Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW. It's our award-winning newscast, 1 hour earlier at 10 o'clock. A full hour of the stories that are important to you and your family from the news team that's watching out for you. Plus, Portland's most accurate forecast certified by WeatherRate from Chief Meteorologist Natasha Stenbach. See why more people are switching to Coin6 News at 10 on Portland CW. Watching out for you.
Hello, Coin6 News anchor Emily Burris here. We know your mornings are busy, and we want to help you be in the know as you head out the door. That's why the Coin Podcast Network is bringing you a brand new podcast called The Daily Six. Every weekday, we'll bring you the day's six biggest headlines in a quick and concise report, on demand and on your schedule. So check out the Coin Podcast Network on coin.com, or have The Daily Six sent directly to you each day by subscribing to the Coin Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
The Coin 6 weather team has the most accurate forecast in town, certified by WeatherRate. Coin 6 weather, watching out for you.
You can hear all the trees falling. You can see the fire just consume the whole area.
Extreme weather in the Pacific Northwest is making headline news around the world. Fire.
It continues to threaten thousands of buildings and has already taken at least four lives.
Ice.
Well, the ice and snow brought down power lines. Over 90,000 customers are still without power.
Heat.
63 deaths can likely be attributed to that heat wave statewide.
I think Mother Nature is very mad at humans.
As unprecedented extreme weather events capture our attention,
the COIN Podcast Network is going beyond the headlines,
deep into a discussion about our changing climate.
Climate change is going to accelerate shifts that have always occurred.
The danger it poses to our future.
And the opportunities available if we choose to address it before it is too late.
Humans are really good at turning even tragedy into a profit-making opportunity.
People are just not prepared for this.
It is a climate in crisis, now streaming on the COIN Podcast Network.
I want to talk a little bit about the struggles of this past 18 months or so with the pandemic and everything that came along with it. Powell's made the decision to temporarily scale back a lot of the operations and wound up letting go a lot of the staff. Those are terribly difficult decisions. But what's been the hardest part of the last year and a half for you and the store?
Boy, that is a really good question. There are so many to choose from. Certainly that moment of, you know, and I still remember it very clearly, that moment of knowing we have to shut down. You know, there was so much lack of clarity around what is safe, what is not safe. And we just felt very strongly, I felt very strongly that we were not going to be the place that got a lot of people deathly ill. And the first and foremost thing was, we want Powell's to survive, but first we want our community to survive. And so it was just this gut-wrenching, horrible moment where we had no idea what was coming next. And so that ranks pretty high in terms of hardest. I would say, though, that probably my answer is more overarching, and that's, I think a lot of us have experienced that it sort of feels like almost every 6 weeks or 8 weeks or pick your number, there's some new aspect, there's some new crisis that arrives such that we can never kind of get our bearings. And they're not small. They're all extremely important. They're all about our collective future. They all have moral weight to them, and they're all important to us. And so as a leader and as the leader of a team who cares very deeply about the way we do business, how we are with each other in the process of doing our work, by which I mean our coworkers, our employees, the community, our partners in our work, and the long-term implications of our choices, that has been kind of a nightmare, to be honest, to have to sort of shoulder that on an ongoing basis. So it's not so much one moment as it's the collective. There is no respite. There's no break in which you get to say, oh, now I'm just going to slump back in the armchair and take a day off. There are important decisions to be made every day, and none of them have 100% positive outcomes. You know, they all have trade-offs. They all have costs. Someone suffers somewhat in all cases, and that's awful.
You mentioned earlier your love for Portland and how you really enjoy this city. You've obviously seen a lot of great things here, and Powell's as a store participated in a lot of great community events. But we know that there are some inherent problems with this city historically. Yes. Or at least for the last few decades, it's been housing.
Yeah.
More recently, we've seen the increase of these violent, politically charged protests. Mm-hmm. And because of where Powell's is located, right at 10th and Burnside, mm-hmm. you kind of have a front row seat to both.
Yeah.
What do you see as kind of the biggest challenges that are facing Portland right now?
Practically speaking, there are so many. When I drive around downtown, I think, good God, you know, we have so many buildings here that need to be updated. They need to be brought into the modern time. They need tenants. And, you know, a city doesn't survive, and it isn't a healthy place to exist with your community when you don't have livelihoods being met on a daily basis on the sidewalk. You know, when you have businesses that are open and you have people coming in and out, you know, so there's a real, I think we face a real physical problem with just the infrastructure, the architecture of our downtown right now. That's just one. You know, I think we all know a mental health crisis going on in our midst, a houselessness crisis, a drug addiction crisis, and there aren't easy solutions and none of them have short-term successes to demonstrate so far. But, you know, I say all of that. For me, ultimately, it is about how the biggest issue I think that scares me is how do we come together to make choices for the better of our community in the long run? It feels to me like we are awfully gridlocked, even in private personal conversations. You know, how do we come to understand each other in a way that doesn't make the person on the other side of the equation a bad person, but just someone with a different perspective, a different life experience? Maybe they are a bad person, you know, but that's not necessarily, you know, that's not my job is to go around deciding that. It's about how do we come together to have important conversations, make decisions, and make progress. And it just doesn't feel like we're getting anywhere. That scares me because we have a lot of big issues to solve, not just here in Portland, but, you know, globally. How are we going to address climate change if we can't even talk about it or agree on it for that matter? So that's probably what I would pick.
Flip side of that, on the other hand, when you go home at night or talk to your friends that don't live here, what are you proud about? What makes you smile about this city?
I mean, I feel like I live in a freaking paradise. You know, I live in Northeast Portland. I feel like we have the worst garden in the entire neighborhood, but because everyone else is going for it, it smells beautiful. You know, in a pandemic, I didn't realize how much that would matter, right? But the idea that at any moment I'm having a bad day, I can step outside and go for a walk, and I'll be met with caring citizens who will, you know, give me extra space on the sidewalk or have a chat over a dog or something. But it's just, it's a beautiful place, and it's a beautiful place physically in terms of the natural beauty. It's a beautiful place in the sense that I think our community really cares about each other. It's palpable, you know, in those daily interactions, even though we come to conflict easily as a result as well. It's funny to me how much people have formed a very different picture in their head about Portland over the last year, because to me, so much of that conflict was happening in a very small space. It was about very particular people and issues, and it was not the experience of most of us living in Portland. So to me, I remain as proud to be here as ever.
I like books. I was born into a family that where reading was very important and very stressed. And I can even remember like fourth or fifth grade picking up a Stephen King book and my mom being like, but you're reading. So,
yeah, right,
and then away we go.
Yeah.
Before I came to Portland for the first time, I was told I had to go to Powell's. When I did, I bought a couple of books and I've been back many, many, many times since. If I were to say Powell's became an icon in Portland because blank, how do you fill in the blank?
Oh, yeah, that's easy for me. I believe it's an ethos that began with my dad, but it happens to exist, I think, amongst book lovers and booksellers everywhere. So it's not unique to him, but it's not to prejudge. It's not to have prejudice around any particular book that you're selling. It's not to say these are the okay books and these are the not okay books that I'm going to, you know, I only want Shakespeare and, you know, whatever, Hemingway, and then the rest is for somebody else to sell. It's to say, if you want to read it, I want to sell it to you. And that there's a magic that comes in that equation. Your story is perfectly appropriate. Your mom says, I'm not sure that Stephen King's exactly what I'd like my kid to be reading. Why not? It's a great gateway. You know, so many doors are open from that experience. And I am a bit of an idealist when it comes to books. I believe that brushing shoulders with people who are different from you, but happen to be standing in the same aisle and pulling a title from someone you didn't expect and has a different story to tell is ultimately going to lead us all in a better direction as a planet. And so I think at the end of the day, the fill in the blank is because we believe in more. You know, we believe that there isn't a limit to what anyone should be reading and that it is for the reader to decide.
It doesn't take a lot of Googling to find Powell's on a list of coolest or funkiest or must-see bookstores in the country. Why do you think Powell's continues to strike that note? What keeps the brand in that kind of spotlight, specifically not in Portland, but around the country?
Well, there's the simple fact, I think, that there isn't anything like us, right? I mean, there is the Strand and, you know, there are other large bookstores around the planet. But in terms of sheer size and number of volumes, it is like walking into a human mind, I believe, in terms of the possibilities. And truly in the labyrinthine sense of, you know, how do I get there? You know, needing a map. We didn't do that on purpose. It's just that books don't make a lot of money. So you're not going to tear down the whole block and build a full building. You know, you're going to duct tape the whole thing together and make it work somehow. So the fact that we are just literally in a physical sense, a very unique place to visit certainly helps. But I think because we embrace that idea of not having prejudice around the book or the reader or the employee, you know, it's that everyone here is welcome and all bring a piece to the pie. I think that translates. I think it translates in a lot of different ways. I think it reflects itself in our inventory. I think it reflects in the choices we make on how we build our buildings and who comes to work for us. And I think all of those very small decisions on a daily basis add up to something that is pretty magical from my experience, you know. I hope from others' experience as well.
Emily, thank you very much for spending some time with me. I've got a couple of quick fire questions before I get you out the door. Favorite book you've ever read?
It doesn't exist. I don't, but I can never answer that question.
Does not exist. Best place in Portland to sit and read?
My favorite chair in my own living room.
What's one author you think everybody in Portland should read?
Well, this is an easy one. I apologize to everyone. It's kind of a softball, but, you know, Mary Oliver, I think, is just a phenomenal poet. Not everyone reads poetry, but you should. It's good for you, and you might even enjoy it in the process. And she is a wise, wise woman.
What are you thinking about when you're not thinking about books?
I mean, probably that six-year-old who, you know, keeps bugging me. I don't have a good answer for that. It's kind of always in my brain. Where are we going from here? How do we keep going from here? What does the future look like? That's always on my mind.
Favorite bookstore in the world you've been to?
Is there one other than Powell's? I don't even understand the question.
Fantastic answer. Last one for you, and you mentioned this kind of offhand a minute ago. Most of the time when I shop in your flagship store downtown, I get lost.
Yeah.
Do you have any fun stories from people who truly get lost and cannot find their way out of the store?
Well, I don't know if this person was lost or not, but we did once find someone asleep on top of one of the bookcases in the purple room. Were they lost or were they just tired, you know, and found it? I don't know.
Sometimes you read a good book and you want to take a nap.
You need a nap, yeah. And you don't mind heights or narrow spaces or dust.
Been a tough roll off if they'd have rolled off.
I mean, that was the issue, actually, was we really discussed long and hard how to wake this person up and extract them safely.
Emily, thank you very much for your time today.
This has been really fun. I appreciate it. They're great questions, and most people don't have great questions, so I appreciate it. It's fun for me.
You remember your first Powell's experience?
I do. I had been living in the Pearl District for about 6 months, I think, at that point, after moving here in 2018. And I walked by. So there were a lot of times I would walk to work when I was first starting here as a reporter. I would walk down 10th. I'd walk south, you know, from the Pearl District down to Coin Tower. And I would pass by Powell's like every day. And on my way home one day, I was like, this is ridiculous. I've lived in Portland for the better half of a year now, and I still have not been inside the one place that I was supposed to go. I popped in there on my way home from work one time. And it's such a respite, you know? I mean, I think what's funny is even though there are constantly tourists there, right, and you could usually pick them out across the street, the folks that are from out of town, there's so many people, all different types of people coming into the bookstore. But you walk in there and there is just something so soothing about a bookstore, you know, getting to kind of go and peruse the shelves, and whether you're going in looking for something specific or you just want to see what catches your eye. You know, I walked through and took a look at some of the, you know, stuff that they had on sale and used books and some of the staff picks, and picked up a couple of things. And it's just fun. It's just a fun thing to do.
You mentioned walking in there and just this feeling. Somehow with all those people in there, it still seems quiet. Every time I walk in there subsequently from my first time, it brings back all of my Powell's memories. I haven't gone to Christmas since we've lived in Portland without doing not a bulk, but certainly a large portion of my shopping at Powell's. Mm-hmm. A lot of the people I buy Christmas presents for really enjoy books, so that mm-hmm. becomes convenient. Mm-hmm. You ever been lost in there?
I've never been lost, but it is fun to kind of wander and then take a minute to regain your bearings and get back out. You know, I have to wonder, you know, when we look at Portland as a city, do you think that Powell's could exist the way it does anywhere else?
It is such a, and we got into it in the discussion, Portland feeds Powell's and Powell's fuels Portland, and it goes back and forth.
Yeah. I mean, I was wondering, listening to you guys talk about it, I just think it almost draws kind of some of those parallels about some of the things that people love about Portland, just some of the quirkiness of the city, some of the things that maybe on its surface would seem a little outdated or quaint, you know, have stood the test of time because the people here want them here, mm-hmm. and they like it this way. And I think that has allowed Powell's to stay as well in this era of all of these digital things and other bookstores and even national companies, you know, having to downsize and change and adapt. Just the fact that it has stood strong, you know, I think speaks a lot too to just why people love some of the things in the city.
Emily did a very good job without coming out and saying it. I get the feeling that she believes and the store is a representation of all the great things Portland can be.
Mm-hmm.
The community that she's built, that they've built inside one city block, that it's a small city, a small town feel in a big city. And, mm-hmm. and I don't think it would work anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Emily.
Thanks, Ian.
The COIN Podcast Network is your home for on-demand coverage of local news, sports, weather, and entertainment you won't find anywhere else. You can always find us on coin.com/podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.